Welcome back. This is the Faith Radio Network. Could your church be targeted by Islamic extremists? Now, that might sound alarmist, but it could be a very real possibility. Joining us to share his expertise on this issue is Ryan Morrow. He's a professor of Homeland Security at Liberty University and a national security analyst for the Clarion Project. Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So ever since those two teenage ISIS sympathizers broke into a church in France, murdered a priest, there's been a lot of concern that ISIS may start targeting local churches in other parts of Europe and now perhaps even in the United States. Do you think that's a credible threat?
Sure. Well, when you look at how that priest was killed in France by ISIS supporters, it's clear that this is something that they want to do. A central point in their ideology is attacking Christians, even more so than just attacking a crowd. We see ISIS willing to attack anyone in the United States. But if you study their ideology, you will see that attacking a church or some symbol of Christianity has extra value to them, just like it would attacking the military, law enforcement, or a political figure. So if you're an ISIS supporter or member, the line of which is really blurred, and you want to not only earn your way into paradise by dying in jihad, but you want to do it in a way that glorifies you as much as possible, then the churches are a target that you're going to look at.
I remember after the incident in France, there was a, I believe, some kind of a bulletin put out by law enforcement in Britain saying, you know, make sure your church is secure, be on guard, be aware. Have there been any incidents in that country since the attack in France?
Not that we know of just yet. But the point is that this is part of a trend, I believe, that you're going to see happening. Whatever goes on in the Middle East is also a vision of what groups like ISIS want to do in the West. It's just the matter of opportunity exists more where they live, obviously, but then also because they're focused on what they call the near enemy, the issue of priority. It's a bigger priority to attack in a Muslim country than to attack in Europe or the United States if you're able to do so. So the vision that you see that they hold in the Middle East also applies for the United States and Europe. And also, I engage a lot of law enforcement personnel, and one of the interesting things I've seen or I've been told over the past, really just over the past year or so, is that there's been a rise in atheist extremism towards churches, churches being vandalized, not quite, you know, not being attacked like on an ISIS-type level, but they're seeing a level of aggression from atheist extremists rise in targeting churches, especially those that are Catholic, because they go beyond saying Christianity is wrong, but actually evil and needs to be wiped out.
Now, you were quoted in a Fox News story which mentioned several U.S. churches that have been harassed by what appear to be Islamic extremists, or at least people that are sympathetic to that cause. Can you tell us about a few of those incidents?
Not in the article specifically, but I do know of foiled plots that have happened in the United States. Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember the exact details, but one of the things you'll see happen is when terror suspects get arrested trying to carry out a plot in America, it really doesn't make news. And so there's been several times where they've either actively plotted to blow up or attack a church, or they've at least conducted the surveillance and consider it among their targets. And it'll appear in the news very, very briefly because it's not news for a plot to be foiled. It's news when something gets blown up. And these type of things now are happening with such frequency that they don't even generate headlines anymore, because the first three letters in news is new. So if it's not new, you don't hear about it.
Well, one of the things I heard, and I, you know, again, this I don't think made the news other than the one Fox News story we mentioned. There was a church, for example, in Riverside, California, very close to San Bernardino, where there was that lone wolf attack. And some guys went by in a vehicle outside the church with a bullhorn shouting Allah Akbar as they drove by the church. And a lot of the people in that particular congregation very concerned that, you know, could their church possibly be a target? Do you know of U.S. churches that are now taking extra security measures to protect against something like this?
Sure. Definitely at events that I've spoken at, because it gets that will just get extra scrutiny just by the nature of what I talk about. But in general, when we have people emailing us from churches, a lot of churches will show our films or bring in a speaker or just discuss our content because they feel it's relevant to their own religious studies. We do hear a lot more about off-duty security guards being hired, even just on a regular basis, even for Sunday service. And the justification isn't always just Islamic terrorism. It's just the fact that it appears that there's more violence and harassment going on in the United States towards churches. And so just over the past few years that I've been really engaging the churches for the Clarion Project, I've seen an increase in the number of pastors and church attendees who have told me, look, we just started hiring a guy every Sunday, an off-duty police officer, in order to help protect us because we felt that that was a worthy investment. Or sometimes they get people that go to the church and then volunteer to do it and they have a security background. But definitely seen a responsible increase in the level of preparation that churches have taken.
I've even heard of...
But they also haven't gone over the top, which I think is also a testament to the strength of the church.
Well, that's well said. We don't want to live in panic and live in fear. Certainly as believers, we know that, you know, our trust is in God and His ultimate sovereignty. I did hear of some churches in Texas where, of course, you know, they have open carry and concealed, you can get concealed carry permit, where they were training their church elders. They were actually preparing them, making sure they all had permits and they all had weapons because of some threats, I think, that were received at a church in Dallas. And they said, you know what? We want to make sure that if this happens in our congregation, we're prepared to act. I mean, that's taken things pretty seriously.
Yeah, you see, I live in New Jersey, so that's not an option. It's really hard to get a gun here, especially if for that purpose, a concealed one. And so the ones I've talked to have been much more likely to say we're actually hiring someone, or we have someone in the church that has a security background that just kind of keeps an eye on things. One of the benefits that the church has is that most people that go there every Sunday, and so you know who looks familiar and who doesn't. And so if there's something that's out of the ordinary, someone's going to notice it, and the church is just more in tune with current events and aware of things like that, I guess because they believe in evil, which a lot of people don't. And so they're more prepared than the average American to identify this type of thing. So in some ways, churches are safer than going to a supermarket in terms of this threat.
That is interesting, and it's a good point. We often do reckon, and of course, the mega churches might be a little different story, but our guest is Ryan Morrow. He is a professor of Homeland Security at Liberty University, also a national security analyst for the Clarion Project. We'll take a quick break here on Faith Radio and be right back. Welcome back. It's Faith Radio. Bill Meyer here with Ryan Morrow. He's a professor of Homeland Security at Liberty University and a national security analyst for the Clarion Project. And Ryan, let me ask you about the fight against ISIS. There was a recent report that the Obama administration may have been trying to make our efforts look a little more successful than they really are. Have you taken a look at that?
I have, actually, all the way back in May of, I believe it was, May of last year. I was writing articles where I went over the numbers that were being presented by the Obama administration in regards to the fight against ISIS, and I said, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. There's something wrong here. And I did that based on the numbers they're providing of how many ISIS members were being killed, or as they call them, fighters, which was their way of deflating ISIS's numbers. What they would do is they would say something like, there's 30,000 ISIS fighters. And it wouldn't make sense considering how much territory they controlled. And then the U.S. government, the Obama administration, would say X number, 10,000, 15,000 ISIS fighters have been killed, but you weren't seeing that reflected on the battlefield but you should have if their number was 30,000 fighters. And it turned out what it appears to be happening is that at least in the public realm, before the scandal even broke, what the way the information was being slanted was that they would say fighters, but not members. Fighters meaning those actively engaged in combat, which completely changes the picture and ends up helping ISIS, because when you make it sound like ISIS is so small and you're having such success against them, but then they grow bigger and bigger and bigger, then that appears to the Muslim world as if they have Allah blessing them. Mm. It makes their success more surprising and more impressive, and it completely backfires. If anything, it would make more sense to exaggerate their size so that when they are not successful, it's clear that they're losing.
Interesting. And it was a whistleblower within the Defense Department that basically said the folks at the upper levels were ignoring the intelligence reports from the lower levels, or at least whitewashing it, which is a big concern. Ryan, Donald Trump recently gave a major speech in Ohio in which he addressed national defense and terrorism. Have you looked at that speech, or can you give us an assessment of what Trump had to say?
Sure. I wrote a lengthy article at clarionproject.org about this that goes into it in more detail. But basically, I broke the article down to three things: the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, which is that he proposed ideologically based vetting that I and others have been advocating for years now, and he just knocked it out of the park on that, completely knocked it out of the park. It was awesome. The bad, though, is that he proposes allying with Muslim reformers in the Middle East, which is a positive thing, but he doesn't really explain how he's going to do that, especially in light of his seeming tolerance and support for dictators. So that's a contradiction that just makes that not feasible, and that's not addressed. But then the real ugly part, and it's really ugly, was when he, for some reason, chose to repeatedly emphasize that he wanted to take Iraq's oil. He sent a message to the Muslim world that he wanted to use military force to take the oil and conquer them, hold on to it. And for decades, that's been one of the main pillars of Islamist and overall anti-American propaganda against us that we've been fighting against, and saying, no, we're not like that. We are a good country. We are not coming to steal your resources, and we will not wage a war and occupy your country in order to do something like that. And we've been fighting that for decades, and we just lost. We just lost that argument.
A lot of people would say that that was a major error to make that particular statement. Ryan, let me ask you a question. Is our government, is the U.S. government, in your opinion, doing the right things right now to protect against possible terrorist attacks here at home?
It's very mixed. If you look at the success we've had, consider the size of the threat and the fact that the FBI and Homeland Security and all of them have such limited resources, they're really stretched to the max. They're doing a really good job. A very, very good job, considering how easy it is to go out and carry out an attack. In fact, even themselves, ones I've talked to, have said, this doesn't make sense. It's got to be a miracle that we haven't had many more attacks, considering the number of people they know want to do something like that and the relative ease with which they could accomplish that. So there's a lot of good being done. ISIS is definitely losing territory in Libya, Iraq, and Syria, so the trends are positive there. But then there's also a lot of mistakes being made, especially in regards to the genocide of Christians in the Middle East, and various policy mistakes, such as, in my opinion, the nuclear deal with Iran, and various other things. So I would say it's very mixed, but it is impressive what the government agencies here in the U.S. have been able to accomplish.
Well, and I know you interact with a lot of law enforcement agencies, and boy, kudos to them for working together. I think we've seen a level of cooperation, and I'm sure you would agree that maybe we hadn't seen in the past, certainly, you know, prior to 9/11, and that all of these agencies, which all have their own individual bureaucracies, are more willing than ever to share information and to work cooperatively.
It's a lot better than it used to be, that's for sure. But there's a ton of problems still with intelligence sharing and information sharing and issues of jurisdiction, fighting between local law enforcement and the FBI. Even other federal agencies, members will complain to me that the FBI is not sharing the information that they need, where there will be a terror suspect, such as Omar Mateen, that carried out the shooting in Florida of a gay club. And I just had someone complain to me from Customs and Border Enforcement saying how their information on them was not supplemented with information from the FBI. They were both looking at this guy, and neither agency knew the other one was doing it. And that's because you have over a dozen intelligence agencies all operating in a duplicative way. And so it just becomes very difficult for all the information to get into one spot and for everyone to be on the same page.
Well, obviously, we got a lot more work to do then. So I stand corrected on that. Ryan, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you, your work at Liberty University, and, of course, at the Clarion Project. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.